SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. Today on the program, Melissa Sandy takes NITV Radio through a journey of loss, resilience and hope in her exhibition at Borloo Contemporary. Also, Kate James is creating a series of colour pennant flags and hoisting them around East Perth Power Station. And the Borloo Bridge is a great connector and a canvas for Tyrone Wagoner. He shares with us his work process in lighting up the bridge with NITV Radio. That and more coming up on the show.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In today's headlines, hundreds of people have defied police restrictions on protests in New South Wales to demonstrate in Sydney against Indigenous deaths in custody. A boy is fighting for his life after being bitten by a shark at a popular beach in Sydney's east. And rescue efforts are continuing across New South Wales, even as conditions begin to ease along the east coast that has been battered with strong winds and heavy rain. That and more coming up in the news. Hundreds of people have defied police restrictions on protests in New South Wales to demonstrate in Sydney against Indigenous deaths in custody. The rally in Hyde Park on Sunday afternoon, 18th of January, was eventually dispersed by officers who cited an extension of the government's controversial protest restrictions, which do not allow police to authorise demonstrations. Paul Silver organised the protest to remember inmates like his uncle David Dungay Jr., who died in Long Bay Prison after being restrained by five prison guards. He says he urged the estimated 200 protesters to obey police order to move on, despite believing the restriction is illegitimate. New South Wales police have defended the state's protest restrictions after officers broke up a rally on First Nations deaths in custody. Assistant Police Commissioner Pete McKenna has confirmed there was a significant police presence at the Hyde Park demonstration because of the government's controversial protest restrictions, which do not allow police to authorise demonstrations. This means gatherings are still allowed, but police have greater ability to issue move-on orders if they deem protesters to be obstructing public places or acting improperly. He says the rules were enforced, but they did not interfere with the group's ability to have their say.
At one stage, through some negotiations, the organisers wanted to move away as a group, and that would have been defying the declaration. You saw the assembly move together in a direction. Police stood in front of them. Police held a line. A move on direction was given, and that stopped the protesters going any further. Ultimately, they dispersed peacefully. There were no arrests made.
Politicians are gathering at Parliament House to consider legislation on hate speech and guns following the Bondi terror attack. Parliament has been recalled early for a two-day session to consider the reforms, which have now been split into two separate bills after opposition from MPs across the political spectrum. With the Greens' support, the government expects the gun legislation to become law, but the fate of the hate speech changes is less clear. A parliamentary inquiry will today release the findings of its review into the proposed laws examined last week. Health Minister Mark Butler told Channel 9 the coalition should get on board with supporting the bill.
We're going to have a very important parliamentary sitting. Today is a day of condolence and of healing and of grief, but tomorrow is going to be a day of action, and there will be a focused couple of bills in the parliament, one of which I think particularly depends on the position of the opposition, cracking down on hate preachers, cracking down on hate groups, and giving the Minister for Home Affairs more powers to throw out people who are here enjoying the privileges of Australia on visas but are actually spreading hatred.
Police say they are yet to establish a motive for the placement of pipe bombs near Lake Genindetta in Canberra last week. A 41-year-old man has been arrested over the discovery of the devices, which police allege were made from items he stole and purchased from Bunnings in Belconnen. ACT Policing Detective Sergeant Samuel Harris says a combination of information from the public and detective work led officers to the suspect's house. He says while no motive is yet apparent, they are confident it is not related to terrorism. The man is due to appear in court today. A boy is fighting for his life after being bitten by a shark at a popular beach in Sydney's east. The incident happened at Vaucluse near Nielsen Park and Shark Beach, a popular swimming spot for families with a netted area in Sydney Harbour. New South Wales police say the boy, who is believed to be 13 years old, is in a critical condition after being treated at the scene for serious leg injuries. He has been transported to Sydney Children's Hospital at Randwick, and Shark Beach has now been closed. Rescue efforts are continuing this afternoon across New South Wales, even as conditions begin to ease along the east coast that has been battered by strong winds and heavy rain. At least 1,000 volunteers for the New South Wales State Emergency Service were on the ground yesterday, Sunday, responding to over 2,100 incidences and rescuing a total of 25 people who were trapped in floodwaters across the state. Warnings have been downgraded in Sydney's northern beaches after an evacuation order on Saturday night forced locals and holidaymakers near Narrabeen Lagoon to head to higher ground. Floodwaters at Narrabeen are expected to take several days to recede as rainy conditions ease. And now in sport, in tennis, Britain's Emma Raducanu has started her Australian Open campaign with a comprehensive 6-4, 6-1 win over Thailand's Menachaya Sungkayu. Raducanu, the 2021 US Open champion, faces Russian-born Austrian Anastasia Potapova in the second round. She says it was motivating to receive and hear the support from fans in the crowd, including one superfan.
Apparently down under I've got Rado. I've never heard that one before, so pretty original. And yeah, I really obviously loved the support. I thought it was great on both sides, but to have that on my side really in the big moments, it was a good spur of encouragement. And of course, I said he can come to any match. I just need to try and like locate him. But yeah, I hope he comes back.
Also advancing to the second round are Aryna Sabalenka, Carlos Alcaraz and Alexander Zverev. American veteran Venus Williams exits the tournament after being defeated by Olga Danilovic 6-7, 5, 6-3, 6-4. And now for today in the weather, Perth is sunny at 18, Darwin is seeing shower with possible storms at 28, Alice Springs is sunny at 31. Brisbane is seeing some rain at 26. Cairns, possible showers at 29. Sydney is seeing rain at 29. Melbourne is partly cloudy at 25. Hobart is cloudy at 18. And Adelaide is sunny at 26. And that wraps up the latest in news, sport and weather. You're listening to NITV Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Later on the show, Melissa Sandy is a Pilbara-based artist, and she guides us through her exhibition, The Void, at Borloo Contemporary. And Kate James, she's also an artist, creating black flags to critique and subvert the stereotypes and is hoisting them around East Perth Power Station. But first, Kwok Ben is a large-scale animated light work illuminating Borloo Bridge in Western Australia as part of the Perth Festival. NITV Radio's Kerry Lee Barry speaks with artist and collaborator Tyrone Wagoner. He's a Wadani Noongar Yauru man from Western Australia, and he gives insights in working with technology and art. Have a listen to this.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
Yeah, I'm Tyrone Wagoner. I'm a Perth-based artist and designer. My heritage is from Wardani Noongar, Yauru and Ngāi. So I have heritage from southwest Western Australia up to Broome, the Kimberley region, and then over to Saba Island in the Torres Strait. My role in this for Perth Fest is as an animator this year, and I'll be working on the Borloo Bridge. Lighting animation. It's pretty exciting.
Sounds really exciting. Tell us about your work as an animator on this outdoor art installation.
Yeah, so it's going to be over the kind of support beams of the bridge because they have a lighting display. And this is going to be quite heavy graphic-heavy animations about the Derwel Yerrigan, Swan River, a lot of the, animal life in there. And then, yeah.
And how do you create such a piece like this as an animator? Can you walk us through the process?
So I kind of do, I guess my animation style is a bit dated, but I work in kind of frame-to-frame animation. So, I draw the characters and the graphics directly on the computer, and then I kind of, animate it by redrawing or manipulating the imagery frame by frame.
Tell us about some of the animals featured in your work.
Yeah, so it's mostly going to be animals you can find around Perth. So it's going to be, long-necked turtles, pelicans, lots of birds, dolphins, bit of sharks there too.
And tell us about the colours involved in this animation piece on the bridge.
Yeah, it's going to be mostly blues and greens and then whatever the, animal colours are. But I want it, to really pop and be really graphic and bright. So it's going to be, really saturated colours, So it's going to be, pretty bright.
This piece is due to open for the Perth Festival. Have you given it a practice run on the bridge? How does that work?
Yeah, so we did a little practice run the other night, did some testing, and it worked really well. Apparently there's going to be one more testing, and apparently it's going to be like live edits available. So, after I get the video done, we're going to be sitting there testing the animation up on the screen and then remotely be able to change things in real time. So it's going to be cool, yeah.
Have you worked on a piece like this before with your art?
Not exactly. I've done a drone show before, so I've done some light-based animation stuff, but never to this, these specifics, like the lighting on the bridge, the shape of it.
And you just mentioned there it's a new challenge for you. What have been some of the challenges in creating such a work?
So mostly it's around video, formatting, because this bridge, it's like two-sided, so you've got to create it to reflect as well. Then, and also one side of the bridge has lots of lights, so the imagery I create is going to show up really well in terms of it, like animals and illustrative elements. The other two sections of the bridge don't have as many lights, so I have to kind of create things slightly differently and manipulate it, edit it, so that kind of story translates over three bridges. But if you don't see the big bridge, you're still getting something out of that story as well.
And you just mentioned story there. Can you walk us through the actual story that will be displayed with this piece of work?
Story is going to be more about Harrison Island. It's kind of an important place for Noongar people, and the Swan River, and then out to kind of Rocknest Island or Wallyup out there. It's going to just have, yeah, lots of native animals, and the importance of the river.
Sounds really lovely. What do you hope audiences will get from taking a look at this beautiful piece of work that's going to show as part of the Perth Festival?
Hope they just enjoy it, really.
Sounds really wonderful. Thank you so much, Tyrone.
You're listening to NITV Radio. Later on the show, we talk with artist Kate James. She's creating a series of colour pennant flags, hoisting them around East Perth Power Station, turning it into a visual canvas for political commentary. But first, we talk with Melissa Sandy. She's a Pilbara-based artist. She talks with NITV Radio's Kerry Lee Barry as she recounts her process of processing grief in her own way. Melissa joins Perth Festival with an exhibition called The Void at Borloo Contemporary. Have a listen to this.
My name is Melissa Sandy. I'm Indubrundi and I'm from Roebourne in the Pilbara.
Now, this is your first solo show.
So this came about through deep sadness and grief after losing one of my aunties who grew me up as a mum. When I lost my mum, she took over the role, as well as my mum's other sisters. So, yeah, never thought my first solo would be something so full of feelings and emotions and, yeah, just so much feeling into it. But yeah, it is what it is. I just needed to use it as a way to help myself get through losing her, but also my family and my community back home, because there's a lot of grief and loss there at the moment. Never stops really in the world. So yeah, I just want to help people through my exhibition.
I'm so sorry to hear that, sis. And grief, like you said, a lot of our communities, it's just never ending, eh?
Yeah.
Sadly.
No, never, yeah.
Tell us about your artwork. How did you start your art?
Well, myself as an artist, I started in 2005 with my mum, my younger sister, my other mum. Yeah, we like calling our aunties mum. But, yeah, and a couple of my other cousin sisters, and we just grew from there and to where we are today. But my solo came about with one painting, and I finished that painting and I realised that there was so much left in my heart that I needed to express, so much hurt, pain, anger from losing her. There was so much surrounding it, just, you know, cancer, it's a battle that some of us just don't win. And then, yeah, just being with her in the last few days of her life and just seeing how strong she was and just still calling back home and, you know, wondering about how family was, and that's who she was. So that one painting, it just didn't express enough, and I needed to do more to help myself. And I realised, and that's when it came to me, that the Void series, that's how it came about, this exhibition. When I sat down and I'd done each painting, it's like I felt her come to me, and each time I painted one of these paintings, something came to my heart, and each time I wrote it down, how I was feeling when I wrote it. So at the exhibition, each painting will show that. It'll tell people how I felt that exact moment as I was working on that painting. So each painting works through my process of dealing with the grief. They start off very dark. And then I start to, this is not only an exhibition through my journey of grief and to help my family and my community, but it is also to pay tribute to my mum, who was a very well-established artist in her own right. So through the exhibition, I start to use her colours, and that's how I pay tribute to her as an artist. And so they start to get lighter. And then I thought, well, I have to use a colour that I've never used before in my life and I never thought I would touch as an artist. That's a very special metallic colour. And I was very, very second-guessing myself when I actually used that colour. But then when I did, I thought, oh, wow, this is special. And it's going to make this exhibition very special because it's about not only processing the grief, like I said, but celebrating mum also. So I have 8-9 pieces in my exhibition, but I also have one of mum's big pieces that she had in the Tracks We Share exhibition in AGWA, which is a big 3x5. So I want her to shine on this night. As artists, we all have our different styles and techniques. And when she first started painting, she actually won a Cossack Art Award. The night we were there at the Cossack Art Award, she goes to our manager, Patricia, who we called Jutta, old lady, and she goes, Jutta, this painting is Jaja, and that means it's no good. And then when the awards are getting sung out, it's like, Aileen Sandy has won this award. And it gave her so much pride and just more meaning to being an artist. And throughout that, she just grown. And she was very quiet. She had a quiet nature. She was very loud and, yeah, within the family. But when it came to talking out in public spaces, she was very quiet, often asked her sister or myself to speak on behalf of her. But at the Tracks We Share exhibition, she actually spoke, holding both our hands. We were side by side. So that was a very special moment for us. So, yeah, Colours Through the Rocks, her paintings were. Had a lovely, rich orange, magenta, and she mixed a very special colour that none of us can get right anymore. So it was her special colour. I think we taught each other. I think as a family who paints together, we thrive off one another, so we teach one another. It's not, oh, she's our elder, so she teaches us how to paint. It's that we learn from each other in that environment. You know, mum had worries with her painting sometimes, so it's all about boosting someone's confidence. And like I said, mum always thought her paintings were Jaja, and yet they were, you know, they're in AGWA, and then she's getting big high commissions for these paintings, and yeah, well, we're still painting. So yeah, we're all very proud of her. We still are. The whole thing about me doing this Void series is that I couldn't process my grief. I had to help my family through it. And so I bottled up all my emotions and feelings towards losing her, and I had to be the strong one to hold the family together, to help her brother and sister get through it. So when this Void series happened and I started, I just let all that emotion out onto my canvas. And when doing that, I felt relieved because I needed something to help me, and I'm so happy that I have this art form to be able to do it. There's so many people out there who don't have something positive to help them with grief. I thought back to all the tributes that everyone sent to me and all the lovely, kind words that they had to say about her. I was thinking, wow, this is someone special who has left our family but still holds a special place in our hearts. And that's why it's called the Void series, because she's left that space in our hearts and our lives, but she's still with us. Every day when we think of her, when we see her artwork. Yeah, it's like you know, you lose one person and then, you know, a year later or months later, you lose someone who's, you know, closer to that person, and it's like it brings it all back. So there's really never any letting go, you know, moving on from grief. You just got to learn to live with it. Well, I'm hoping that she'd be proud of me. You know, it's like I'm not only helping myself, but I'm trying to help her sons as well, who she left behind, help her grannies, just to move on and just, you know, you got to move on in life, but you don't need to forget that person. That's why in this exhibition I have that big piece of hers, because it's not only about my journey through grief, but it's also about celebrating Mum.
Kate James is a Wathawurrung artist. Since 2018, Kate has been carving out a visual language based on the reappropriation of radicalised products, colloquially known as Aboriginalia. These are the mass-produced commercial products ranging from souvenir tea towels and pennant flags and children's dolls and figurines. She's now creating a series of colour flags, and she's hoisting them around East Perth Power Station, turning it into a visual canvas for political commentary as part of the programming for Perth Festival. Have a listen to this yarn.
My name's Kate James. I'm a proud Wathawurrung woman living and working on Wurundjeri country.
And can you tell us about your artistic practice? What do you do, Kate?
Yeah, so my art practice is kind of about reclaiming and recontextualising everyday objects and spaces that have kind of contributed to the attempted erasure and misrepresentation of Indigenous culture. I work mainly with textiles, so embroidery and punch needling and tufting, but I've also started working with kind of ceramics and printmaking as well. So a lot of my work uses found objects, like Aboriginal sort of themed souvenirs, tea towels, and also pennants, items that kind of might seem harmless or kitschy, but when you kind of look closer, you see that they've played a role in reshaping how a very narrow and often inaccurate view of Aboriginal identity. And so, yeah, I take these objects and rework them using like a lot of bright colours and humour and language to celebrate our culture, but also challenge those narratives and reclaim stories.
And those products you're just speaking of there are basically colloquially known as Aboriginalia across Australia,
yeah.
Mass-produced items which were commercial products. When did you first discover such items? Were you a young girl? Was it as you were older that these items showed themselves to you?
Yeah, so it's probably maybe about 10 years ago I sort of started collecting these objects. I'm really interested in sort of the tension between nostalgia and truth and how something can feel really familiar or confronting, but also hold layers of harm. So that's kind of how I started collecting them. It was more the Aboriginal tea towels that I started to rework first.
And it was interesting times, of course, back then. Interesting items these non-Indigenous artists produced. Do you understand what these artists were trying to do back then in any way, shape or form, Kate?
I think they were just trying to make money, to be honest with you. Majority of them were made by, you know, non-Indigenous artists, and I think it was about sort of making culture, like it's a kind of manufactured culture, making it accessible for lots of people, creating kind of a white view of what Indigenous culture was, basically. I've looked a lot of at Brownie Downing's work, and she was obviously making a lot of ceramic work and paintings and drawings of Indigenous children in the 60s and 70s or even earlier, and with no reference to what was actually happening to Indigenous children at that time. So there is such, a really harsh truth behind these objects that, no one kind of talked about at the time. Yeah, so, I see it as a commodification of culture, basically.
And I'm really interested to hear all about your collection. Where do you find your Aboriginalia? Vintage shops, op shops, eBay? How does it happen for you?
Everywhere. Yeah, everywhere. A lot of vintage shops. People have started to send me a lot of things as well, which is amazing. Yeah, I've boxes and boxes of stuff, which, obviously takes up a lot of room, but and it's amazing how a lot of it is still really expensive. There is a market in Castlemaine that have stopped selling it. Yeah, so it's interesting, people's opinion of it now, because some of it is still really expensive and people still collect it. But then, yeah, I've got a lot of it now.
And as part of your collection, you mentioned before there, you've got Aboriginal tea towels from the past. What else have you got in your collection? And do you have a prize piece of this Aboriginalia, as we call it?
I don't like to have favorites, but yeah, I've got a lot of ceramic works now, a lot of wall figurines that I love. But yeah, mainly tea towels, tablecloths, and also a lot of pennant flags. They were kind of those, felt small felt screen printed flags. But yeah, I don't know whether I have a favorite. I don't think I do. Yeah, I've got a lot of even playing cards. Yeah, I've got oven mitts. It just goes on.
You just mentioned pennants there, which brings us to your current work as part of the Perth Festival 2026 in early 2026. Tell us about what you've created for the Perth Festival and why.
Yeah, so Black Flags is a series of nostalgic triangular pennant flags that are inspired by the souvenirs of the 60s and 70s. And I was drawn to these, especially the way they celebrated place, but completely overlooked sort of deeper histories in the culture and traditional owners of the land. So it's kind of continuing on my practice of reclaiming and reworking. And I wanted to take sort of that tourist aesthetic and turn it into something that acknowledges truth and challenges kind of erasure, but also centers Indigenous perspectives. So these, I've made a series of three flags specifically for Perth Festival. And these ones kind of, they're more to honour the strength and pride and resilience of the Noongar community. The three are Kort Mort, so that's heart and family in Noongar language, and that celebrates sort of kinship and connection. And I've used the iconic WA black swans and sort of reimagined them through an Indigenous lens, kind of decolonizing and reclaiming them as an expression of sovereignty and belonging. I've also made one called Big Mom Energy, and that sort of carries an uplifting spirit, sort of recognizing the momentum or, power that comes from community and standing strong together. And then the last one is Boilie, which means power, strength, and energy. And that features a crow, which is a shared moiety between with both the Wadjuk and my own Wadawurrung Kulin mob. So it kind of si symbolizes like the cultural ties and the relationship that links like all our nations. But there's also kind of another series, I think of five, that I made previously. That also kind of have more of a truth-telling twist.
We all love a bit of truth telling. Tell us about those pieces.
Yeah. So I like sort of taking something that's recognizable and flipping the narrative on that. So I use a lot of kind of slogans or imagery that are recognizable. So one of them is actually the old telecom symbol, which to me always looks like an alien head. And even so, all over where I live, you see these old manhole covers on the ground with these stamped telecom symbols, and that kind of reminds me that of like invasion and and kind of aliens and stuff like that. So it's kind of stamped all over the land. And when I went to Perth, it's also over there as well. So I like using kind of a symbol or something that's part of popular culture that I can, reimagine. So that's one of the flags. Yeah. So the other ones have a lot, kind of text, and it's use a lot of humor sort of as a powerful political tool. So, using that tension between nostalgia and truths about colonization. Yeah. So I'm hoping, I'm hoping that the Perth community really enjoy them.
And I'm interested to know, how does an artist from Victoria, how do they come to do work over in WA? And how did you consult the community, the local mob, to then honour them, the Noongar community, with this piece of work for the Perth Festival coming up?
Yeah, it's Perth Festival, it's such a major platform, and it's the first work that I've kind of really made for outside of Victoria. So it was such an honor, and it feels really special to contribute to something so far away from where I live and my own mob. But yeah, I visited Perth in September and got to meet a lot of local mob and elders and sort of talk about culture and community over there. And I really wanted the flags to kind of honor how strong a mob they are. And it feels really special to to show be asked to show something in Perth and something with such big works as well that will be seen by so many people. But yeah, I really wanted to honor the Noongar community, and it's lovely to see how strong a mob they are, and what a wonderful community. They're so resilient and connected and so fiercely proud as well. Yeah, so it's been a real honor to make work. But yeah, I did consult with them over the language use as well, and showed them some of the previous works that I've made. So yeah, it's been a great time.
And let's talk about the work for the Perth Festival. We are radio. How would you best describe it to us? What does it look like? What will it look like?
So there'll be the three main flags will be on the side of the East Perth Power Station. So one of the flags is going to be like 6 meters by 9 meters, so absolutely enormous and super bright. And then there's two smaller flags. I mean, I say smaller, but they're still going to be like 3 meters by 5 meters or something. So they're going to be absolutely huge. And hopefully, be able to see them from far away. The power station is kind of located on the river there. So, hopefully it will look amazing. And then there'll be a lot of bunting that will go up around the festival as well, smaller, very colourful bunting. And then there's about, I think there's four other flags that will go up around the site as well.
Sounds fabulous, sis. I'm wondering what Aboriginal artists from across the nation inspire you with your work, Kate?
Oh wow, there's so many. My absolute hero is the late great Destiny Deakin, and I've actually used her term of black without the C to name this work. But yeah, I mean, there's so many other artists that I really admire. Especially like artists that also use Aboriginalia, like Tony Albert. I think he even coined that term. So there's so many artists that works that I love. Kaylin Whiskey is also a massive hero of mine. I absolutely adore her work and how she also celebrates culture.
What was it about Destiny's work that you really loved, sis?
How strong her pride in culture was, and how she celebrated it, and I mean, how she also used familiar objects in her work, and the color that she used, but also the power like behind all the work. It's yeah, she always just blew me away. And it's so recognizable as well, her work. It's you could never confuse it with anyone else's work.
And you also mentioned Tony Albert's there. He does some incredible work, doesn't he, across
For
Australia?
sure. And this amazing triennial that he's just curated in Canberra. I can't wait to go and see that. Like, brought together so many amazing artists. He's unstoppable.
We might leave it there for today. Kate James, thanks so much for joining us on NITV Radio.
Thanks so much, Kerry Lee. It was lovely chatting to you.